from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning, happy Wednesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Ursula is enjoying her vacation. But Aaron Mason, my former co-host with Cairo Nights, joins us. Good morning to you, Brother Mace.
Good morning, G. Nice to be here again.
Yes, sir. Glad to have you. Good morning to you, Chef.
Oh, good morning, all.
All right. Hey, coming up at 9:30, Nicole Jennings, our Cairo Radio news reporter, she will join us to talk about a racist incident that was actually caught on film. It had happened at Capital High School down in Olympia. She joins us at 9:30. But right now, let's get to it. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
Here's the question. Should fewer juveniles be offered diversion instead of jail when they commit a crime? Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott has
more. County Council Member Reagan Dunn calling for the pause of the RCP, or Restorative Community Pathways Program, and the removal of some of the crimes allowed to be diverted under the program.
Assault in the third degree, residential burglary, unlawful possession of a firearm.
Jimmy Hung handles juveniles at the prosecutor's office and says while diversion can be offered in instances such as assault, it depends on the exact circumstances. And as far as kids with a gun go,
kids, you know, in most cases are bringing guns to school because they think it's cool, because they somehow got their hands on a gun and they're showing it off to kids.
Hung says they do not divert any cases where a threat has been made with a weapon. Hannah Scott, Cairo News Radio.
And further, Jimmy Hung told Como News that, quote, the more we prosecute kids in the juvenile justice system, the more we lock them up, the worse they become. G. Scott, what about the accountability and public safety that Reagan Dunn is speaking to?
That's exactly where I want to start this at. They mention that Restorative Community Pathways lacks accountability and turns over too much decision making to community groups instead of courtrooms. And it kind of reminds me of how our local government turns over our homelessness crisis over to the community as well, and how our local government lacks accountability while asking us, we, the taxpayers, for more money while the problem continues to increase. There is no doubt about it that right now, currently, throughout the country, we have a 25% increase in violent crimes. That's just not here locally. This is a national problem. We have a mental health problem. We have a wage disparity problem. We have all kinds of issues. But the one thing that we cannot continue to do is continue to do the same thing over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear. 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds with guns and acting violent and doing all of these things is tragic. When I was 14, I was watching cartoons. You understand me? This is terrible. So if I believe that what I just said right now, I think we all can agree with that. That's a start, that we can all get on the same page that this is horrible. The violent crime that is happening, the increase that is happening across our country is absolutely horrible. Now, bear with me for one second, though. Since this pandemic has started, 10 U.S. men doubled their collective wealth from $750 billion to $1.5 trillion. While they pay a lower tax rate than the middle class. What does that have to do with anything? I'm going to go ahead and connect it right now. We also, at the same time, we just recently just sent 5 million kids into poverty by taking away the child tax credit to save $60 billion. So what I'm trying to say is, we can keep trying to arrest away the problem. Okay, I agree. If you commit a crime, you should get arrested. But what I'm saying is when you take a 14-year-old that does something, gets caught with a gun, or does something violent, which is awful, we arrest them. No doubt about it. And then we think that that 14-year-old is going to be rehabilitated. And I think you and I, we all know that that 14-year-old, once they go to juvenile and then once they go into the prison system, I think we kind of know that that 14-year-old will not be the same after that. So my question is when are we going to spend the majority of our time trying to prevent this from happening?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, one of the problems is a lack of nuance. It's really hard for a lot of people to hold multiple shades of gray in a situation. If you're somebody who goes, you do something wrong, you get locked up, that's it. Clear, simple, cut and dry. You're wrong. Nothing's cut and dry. Nothing is that simple. One of the things that you said, G, about being in the system, and are you going to get rehabilitated? Are you going to come out better than you went in? We have a lot of evidence that that's not the case necessarily. And so what we want to do, I think what a lot of people want to do, is just get rid of the problem. They just, whatever it takes, I don't care. I just don't want this problem anymore. And it feels good when a bad guy gets caught. It feels good when a dangerous person is taken off the street. But it doesn't solve the problem. And the problem is very complicated, very nuanced. I agree with you that a lot of it starts with poverty. A lot of it starts with a lack of money. You can hold up whatever consequence you want. But if someone is desperate, they are going to not process that consequence like other people might, and probably go for it anyway.
I was going to move on, but I'm not now. Because this topic right here almost has me in tears. It has me that way because I said something a second ago. I said what I was doing at 14.
Yeah, right.
And what I was doing at 14 is because of what my parents were able to do. Now, there's some listening that said, CG, that's it. These parents got to be better. My parents were better because my father went to the military, right? My father went to the military, but he was the only one of his brothers and sisters that did that.
Mm-hmm.
His siblings, they struggled. So when I would go and see to my cousin's house, and you know what my cousins would deal with at 14?
Right.
Their mom selling their shoes.
Right.
There'd be different men inside of the house. They'd see drugs all the time. I never understood that. Like, whoa, why are you guys doing that? This is so wrong. This is so bad. Because as a kid, I saw it as being bad because of how I was raised. And so what I'm trying to illustrate to you is this. When I say, how are you at 14, or how are your children at 14, it's easier to blaze a trail in a path when you're not having to worry about food,
mm-hmm.
when you're not having to worry about your mom or your dad on drugs, when you're not having to worry about your mom and dad in and out of the prison system. And so it is easier to do that. And so I look at my life today, and by the way, I'm not sitting here bragging about my life. I'm just saying that I had it easier, and I'm trying to point out that not everybody has that chance. So let me get back to the point. The point is this: I'm not going to spend the rest of my time trying to argue with why it's important for some of these young men and women to be able to get second chances. However, what I will do is I will spend the majority of my time trying to help people better understand why we have to prevent that young man or young lady from getting to that point at 14 or 15 in the first place. Mm-hmm. And why does that happen? Why are these homes the way that they are? Why are kids not having to only eat at school and not eat at home?
Right.
If we can answer those things. And by the way, if you live in the suburbs, if you live in a nice neighborhood, if you're doing everything perfect and everything right within your household, you have to understand that all of these things, we are one big community, right? So it all impacts us. So that 14-year-old that's having a rough life might run into your daughter, right? Might run into
right.
your son
right.
that is living a great life. And you can't just outlock it up, because once you lock that person up, it's going to be the next and the next and the next. And Chef, I'm sorry for going on this path.
I want to say, too, there's also this idea that people have of like, villainizing these kids, right? And I'm not defending them, right? If someone commits a violent crime, like they have to pay for it. But you also have to remember that these are children, and so many people think, well, that's a bad apple. There's no hope for them. Right. So they don't believe in rehabilitation because it's simpler just to go good guy, bad guy. And how different are you today than you were when you were 14? I am a world different than I used to be. People do change, but they need to be given the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, you're just reacting to the things right in front of you that are frightening and desperate and all of those intense things.
Let's go, Chef.
Gee, I can hear the passion in your voice. I'm actually going to invite Hannah Scott on at 10 o'clock to talk to us about this issue more. She had some fascinating conversations with both Reagan Dunn and the prosecutor's office. I want you to hear an example of what could have happened to a girl who brought a gun to school because of a TikTok challenge, should this proposal go through. But for right now, let's move on.
You said something about passion. No. I'll save this point for Hannah at 10. Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. So let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about Pike Place Market. We've been keeping it kind of heavy. So let's transition to the war on cars. Seattle City Council member Andrew Lewis, he is spearheading a proposal to get rid of cars in the Pike Place Market. It's a move that he hopes will make it a more walkable and enjoyable experience for all. But he's getting some unexpected pushback, and that's from the Pike Place Market Preservation and Development Authority. That's the board that oversees the market. They have the authority, along with the city traffic engineer, to make such a change and remove the cars. They released a statement saying that, quote, during the pandemic, the Pike Place Market PDA has managed the market, including street use, doing its very best to keep it functioning for the benefits of all, and making it arguably the safest, most vibrant part of downtown. Why now would the Seattle City Council want to meddle in the management of the market? G. Scott, why indeed? Why not take away the cars?
You know, from my home and me making my pilgrimage visit to Pike Place Market probably three times a year, it would be very selfish of me to tell Pike Place in that area, the business and all those folks, what would work best for them. I know I'm used to seeing people that are really, really rich tell people that aren't really, really rich what's best for them. So in that case, I'm going to hold down. I'm going to stand down because this is also the city that agreed to all these bike lanes and took away parking all over. I'm going to, Mace, I'm going to defer to the folks that know best around Pike Place. So whatever they want to do, whatever they believe will keep business flowing, will keep things going, keep it preserved the way that it is, I'm going to side with them because I feel like they know best. I would be selfish to take any other side.
All
I'd be selfish.
All right, so you're going to make me take a side. Okay. I just don't see a more clear example around the city than this for not using cars on a particular stretch of road. That cobblestone curb, there are so many people there. That's a street people cross to go from Pike Market to the first Starbucks. There's always just a mob of people in that street. And outside of maybe, okay, you have some delivery traffic or there are hours, you know, where early in the morning the vendors show up, they have to unload things, whatever it may be. I'm okay for that. But then during the day, during the time where there's tons and tons of people walking around, a lot of whom aren't familiar with the city because they're not from here. It's a big tourist spot. I just don't see any need for a car there, or I mean on First Avenue in general. If you're driving down First Ave, you've already made a mistake.
Oh, completely hard disagree. I used to drive First Avenue all of the time, driving between Soto and the market to get stuff for the restaurant. I'd park in the parking right there, either illegally or legally, drop $1,000 at the market, swing back to the restaurant. If they shut cars down in that area, I think it will impact business. However, G, I'm going to defer to you right now and defer to the Pike Place Market Association and move on to our third story.
Oh, my God. Hey, I just want to say, maybe I should do radio this way. Maybe I should play it safe on these topics.
Yeah, and paint your guest in a corner. That's cool, man.
I actually believe that if I played it safe, I would have a longer career.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? True. Like, let me take the popular opinion there. All right, what do you guys
think?
You might have a longer career, but we'd have a very short show if this is all you had to say on topics, G. And that is, I have a lot of personal feelings, but I don't feel qualified to speak on this, so I'm going to defer to the experts. All right, so let's move on to the Seattle Seahawks, who finished the season 7-10, very disappointing for a lot of fans, last in the NFC West, missing the playoffs for the first time since 2017, even though the playoffs are expanded, and now changes are on the way. The Seahawks will part ways with defensive coordinator Kenny Norton Jr. G, does this mean that we get back to the bruising, hard-hitting kind of defense that we saw during the Seahawks Super Bowl run?
Well, it wasn't Ken Norton Jr. That's the reason for not the hard hitting. It's not his fault. He didn't draft LJ Collier in the first round, and he's not panning out. He didn't draft some of these other defensive linemen that aren't working out. Some of these defensive backs and Trey Flowers that aren't working out. The Seattle Seahawks were 12-4 last season, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
They were 12-4 last season. This season, they were 7-10. And here's my question for you, Mace. If you had to pick, what was the biggest reason that the Seahawks were 7-10? I'll give you two choices.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
It was, you could pick A, the defense was the problem, or B, the offense was the problem, including Russell Wilson and his finger. Go ahead.
B, the offense. Huh. There was so much dependent on Russell being perfect, right? There's a lot of Seahawks wins during his tenure that were pulled out because he pulled off something miraculous, and he just wasn't there. There are other problems, but he wasn't up to that. From what I saw this year. So there's a lot going on, but hey, you have a bad season once in a while. That's okay.
Well, my next pick for defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks, the person that I want them to pick as the next defensive coordinator, it is defensive line coach who's currently there, Clint Hurt. He is my pick for them to make the defensive coordinator. And you know what? I got five on it. Hey, coming up next at 9:33, Nicole Jennings will join us to speak on and talk about the racist incident that happened actually on camera at Capital High School down there in Olympia. We discuss that next. Gian Ursula with Mace. It is the Gian Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Coming up at 9:47, we need to talk about, do we still need to give a 2-week notice when we quit? And do companies give us a 2-week notice before they fire us? Joining the Gian Ursula Show right now is Nicole Jennings, and she was down and she did a story about a racist incident that happened down in Capitol High School down in Olympia, and she has that featuring story now.
Capitol High School students made a video for social media in which they're making ape noises and calling a black player on the rival team a gorilla.
You number three, you.
Kai Steplight says the River Ridge High School player number three that they're referring to is his son, Amari.
You know, you try to shield your kids from these things. You try to, even though they're going to experience it as adults, but you try to make sure that they don't have to worry about this part of it right now.
And the gorilla slur is one that Kai knows all too well.
When I was young, I'd walk downtown Olympia. We were called gorillas all the time. You know that it's a remark that's made specifically towards black people.
But three decades later, it's still going on.
When I look at the community, there's this sense of acceptance, like, we've just accepted that these are the names that we're called. This is the way they look at us.
And Kai says the basketball game was not an isolated incident.
There's this line drawn in the sand where it's like as soon as you walk into the Olympia School District, specifically at these sporting events, they have these fans and they get very ugly with their words, very racially driven.
He says his entire life he's noticed that he's treated differently in Olympia. One of Kai's black neighbors in Lacey doesn't like to go into Olympia for that reason. And Kai says that he knows others in the Olympia School District who drive their kids across district lines every day just to escape the racism.
Some of the friends that are my age who went to that high school, a lot of them are saying, well, I left the high school because of this stuff. I didn't do sporting events because of this. So there's a long history.
After Kai posted the video on social media, he got an overwhelming response from parents.
It's not even just the basketball games. People are telling me stories from the football games. People seem like they're ready to speak out.
And Cairo News Radio got some of that, too, including an email from a mom who says that her son was also the victim of racist insults at games against Capitol. When she tried to alert adults at the school, she says she was brushed off. Cairo News Radio did reach out to the Olympia School District. The district tells us in a statement that it has no tolerance for racism and that the Capitol High School students who were involved are being disciplined. The district says it aims to be a safe space, especially for students of color. But Kai and the other parents feel that not enough is being done. Kai says whether it's through large school assemblies or small advisory groups, the school needs to be addressing racism better so that this doesn't happen to anyone else.
There needs to be a conscious effort in education in these schools to talk about these issues.
After all, he says, it comes down to compassion. Treat others how you'd want to be treated.
Have these kids get a better understanding on how it makes us feel.
Nicole Jennings, Cairo News Radio.
And Nicole Jennings joins us right now. Good morning to you, Nicole.
Good morning.
And how is his son doing today? How's he doing?
You know, the sad thing is he said that his son didn't seem too bothered by it. Kind of what he was talking about with acceptance, that he was just like, well, that's the way it is. That's what they call us. And that he wasn't more shocked by it. And that was the really disturbing part, is that it didn't come as a surprise.
When he says that he would like to see more, and obviously Capitol High School is or the Olympia School District is going to investigate this and hold those accountable for these actions. Are there some other things that this dad would like to see in place other than classrooms and apologies? Does he want an apology to his son? What are some other things that this dad would want?
He came up with a few different suggestions for how this could be taught. Basically, it needs to be, he says, on a weekly basis to really drive the point home. So he was talking about possibly an advisory. And I know when I was in high school, we would meet regularly in advisory groups. I don't know if that's still the case these days. He said you could do it in assemblies, although there might be an issue with COVID right now. But basically, getting these white students to think about what it, you know, what their black their black peers are going through, you know, what it feels like to be in their shoes. How would you want to be treated if you were those students? And just driving the point home of it seems like these students have never in their lives thought about that, about how you should be treating other human beings. It just mind boggling.
Yeah. Is there one of the things that stuck out to me was about how pervasive this problem seems to be, and
yeah,
talking about the neighbor from Lacey that doesn't like to go to Olympia, the school district, people going to other school districts. Is there what do people have to say about that, about sort of the width and depth of this problem?
I can tell you that my email was blowing up last night overnight with emails from parents coming in describing horrific incidents. In one case, one parent was talking about her son, who's black, being chased down in his car after a game and run off the road. And all that happened to the students involved in that was just she said, given a slap on the wrist, just a suspension. I think that's a criminal act right there. In other cases, some of the parents were talking about a high school student who drives his truck to school with a Confederate flag flying in the back. They said there was a blackface incident, just this utter racist, not to mention lack of sportsmanship at games. I feel like in my high school, we would have been punished just for the lack of sportsmanship right there. Then you add the racism on top of that, that would have been an expulsion at my high school. But just that this is just a problem that's been going on in the Olympia School District in particular. And I asked that. I said, I mean, you know, so many of us, I think, have been privileged to grow up not witnessing this sort of thing. So is this happening in every school district behind closed doors, or is this specifically an Olympia problem? And Kai said it really seems to be, I mean, of course, there's racism going on everywhere, of course, that so many of us are privileged to not see. But he says this specifically seems to be especially bad in Olympia for whatever reason. There is such a long history of it that the white community is not welcoming for some reason. And, you know, and I asked the school district for an interview. They turned down the interview. They said they were having tech problems all day yesterday. Their internet was down. But they did send me that statement. Unfortunately, the statement didn't go into too much detail, and they weren't able to tell me how the students are being punished, how many were involved, the students' identities. They said that would all be a violation of privacy. So I don't know too much about how the students are being disciplined, what that will even entail.
Nicole Jennings, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for joining us, and great work on this story.
Thank you.
Hey, coming up next, and we need to talk. I'm going to call an audible here.
All right.
And what I want to do is I want to address this topic. And there's some that are probably just listening to this, and they probably say, well, why? Why is this happening now? Because there was a time 25, 30 years ago, I don't remember it being this bad. Mm-hmm. I have an answer for you. I'm not saying it's the entire answer, but I have a huge reason as to why some of these things are happening today. I'll explain that next. G and Ursula with Mace. It is the G and Ursula Show. Aaron Mason joins in for Ursula. Ursula's enjoying a nice little vacation. I want to talk about continue on what we talked about. Nicole Jennings talked about the racist incident that happened down in Capitol High School down in Olympia. And it was a great feature that she had done. Mm-hmm. But it just, so many things that I talk about, whether it's homelessness, whether it's crime, whether it's everything we talk about, we always talk about or we react to things, but we have to do a better job to talk about how did we get here. Race is a socially constructed category of people who share, we all share the same biologically transmitted traits mm-hmm. of each other. Mm-hmm. It's socially constructed. It was created based on our physical attributes. And so the question is, why is this happening more today? Why is this happening in communities? By the way, this just doesn't happen in Olympia. This happens in Olympia. It happens in Tacoma. It happens in Seattle. Right. It happens in Sammamish. It happens. I could do this all day. But here's one of the biggest. Not one of the biggest reasons. One reason as to why this is starting to happen. I used to think that all-star teams in sports going to play on that all-star team, taking the couple best kids in the neighborhood and going out to another neighborhoods and putting together these power teams, because that way all of the really good kids could play together. Mm-hmm. I've told you before, and I'll say it again, it is hurting our communities. I remember, you guys probably remember, we used to play sports in the community. That's how we met Rob or Sherry right. or people in our community. We knew the people in our community because we all played sports together. In the park. Right. And it was $35 for your registration. Now it's like $3,000, but that's another topic in itself.
Yeah.
But what's happening is here we are, we have more tech, but we are being more isolated and we don't communicate. We don't even hardly know our neighbors. So when you don't know something, you fear something. Mm-hmm. When you don't know, if you don't know anybody black or if you don't know anybody white, you might fear them. One of the best things that's ever happened to me is that well, it was terrible then, but it's the best thing now. I was shipped off to military school at 11 years old. I spent 7 years at a military school, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, all different ethnicities, all in the barracks that I lived at. It was the great, I hated it then, but it was the greatest thing ever for me. Yeah. I'm going to ask you something, and I apologize for this. But Mace.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, what was it like for you if maybe you didn't come up around black people? Or if you never worked, the first time you and I worked side by side every single day.
Yeah. Now, I went to a high school that drew, this will take like 20 seconds. I went from a high school that drew from three different towns.
Okay.
And two of those towns were very white and middle class. And the third town was predominantly people of color, black and Hispanic, and lower income. And so when I got to high school, there we were racially mixed, but there were big walls between students. Like I didn't, I was friendly with some black kids in class, but like we never hung out after school.
Okay.
And so for me, it was exposure, but not intimacy or trust or, you know what I mean? Like real personal connection. The thing for me, G, is the environment that allows this. I think, you know, this is happening now. This has always been happening, but it seems to be happening more out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because the environment allows it to do that. And so when I was in school, they were very particular about race. They're very sensitive to it, right? And there are places like I can only imagine this high school in Olympia where that's just not the case, where you don't suffer consequences for that kind of behavior.
All right. I guess I got 2 minutes on this one. Chef, did you want to add anything in? I don't want to.
Okay. Well, when you bring up the topic of proximity, I'll keep it short. My best friend in high school was black, half black. I will admit that in my mind, I never really considered him black, though the rest of the world saw him that way. And until you actually are around people of color, I can tell you, until probably 6-7 years ago, if I met a black person or was in a work situation with another black person, I was always, always conscious of their skin color. There was an uncomfortability.
Right.
How do I talk to this person? Do I need to be different? Do I need to be sensitive? I don't know how to be in this situation with another person because we never talked about race when I was a kid. I think that's a lot of people's experience.
One of the worst things that we did over the last 20 years, and this is where we set ourselves back. We started to say things like, I don't see color. We started to say things like, hey, it's not the right time to talk about race. Hey, oh, I don't know about doing that. I kind of feel uncomfortable. And I'll say this for Olympia. You have an opportunity now to continue the discussion and make it better for the kids that come through those schools tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and say that Olympia is a terrible town. I'm going to say that these terrible actions happen in all towns across the country. I guarantee you that the majority of the people that live in Olympia are good people. Squeaky wheel gets the grease, and let's move forward. Gene Ursula.